Take back the city for yourself tonight. I'll take back the city for me. Take back the city for yourself tonight. Whoa, whoa.
Welcome to Third Paradigm, an out-of-the-box think tank on community sovereignty and regenerative economics. We look at how to take back our cities, farmland, and water, our money, production, and trade, our media, education, and culture, our religion, and even our God. I'm your host, Teresa Caraggio, broadcasting through Free Radio Santa Cruz and Upstart Radio Online.
No need to put your words into my mouth. Don't need convincing at all.
Welcome to the 21st episode of Third Paradigm. This past week, Jerry Mander, the patriarch of the anti-globalization movement, came to Capitola Book Cafe to present his book written with Kuhan Pike, The Super Ferry Chronicles, Hawaii's Uprising Against Militarism, Commercialism, and the Desecration of the Earth. How can a simple ferry scuttling between the Hawaiian islands be so evil? Militarism, commercialism, and the desecration of the earth? Come on. Well, picture the battleship Galactica slicing through whale breeding grounds and sea turtle sanctuaries at 40 miles per hour, its Darth Vader visage 5 stories high. In this episode, we'll look at why appearances may not be deceiving, except for the paintings of happy manta rays on the sides. Jerry's research uncovers a dead zone of fishy evidence that the catamaran is a prototype for a fleet of high-speed shallow water vessels, sized to transport military vehicles. When we return, we'll look at the web of collusion and deception trailing it, and how 1,500 citizens and surfers from Kauai stopped the oncoming colossus. But first, I'll read a poem by William Stafford to the music of Pink Martini with Hang On Little Tomato. A Message from Space. Everything that happens is the message. You read an event and be one and wait. Like breasting a wave, all the while knowing by living, though not knowing how to live. Or workers built an antenna, a dish aimed at stars, and they themselves are its message, crawling in and out, being worlds that loom, dot dash, and sirens and sustaining beams. And sometimes no one is calling, but we turn up eye and ear. Suddenly we fall into sound before it begins. The breathing so still it waits there under the breath. And then the green of leaves calls out, hills where they wait or turn, clouds in their frenzied stillness unfolding their careful words. Everything counts. The message is the world. William Stafford, from The Way It Is.
The sun has left and forgotten me. It's dark, I cannot see. Why does this rain pour down? I'm gonna drown in a sea of deep confusion. Somebody told me, I don't know who. Whenever you are sad and blue, and you're feeling all alone and left behind, just take a look inside you and you'll find you gotta hold on. Hold on through the night. Hang on, things will be alright, even when sunny love, just hang on. Hang on to the vine, stay on. Soon you'll be divine. If you start to cry, look up to the sky. Something's coming up ahead to turn your tears to dew instead. And so I hold on to this advice. When change
that was A Message from Space by William Stafford from The Way It Is, and Pink Martini with Hang On Little Tomato from their CD of the same name. The Portland, Oregon-based Little Orchestra was founded in 1994 by Thomas Lauderdale, a Harvard graduate and classically trained pianist, to play political fundraisers for progressive causes such as civil rights, the environment, affordable housing, and public broadcasting. Lauderdale met China Forbes, Pink Martini's Diva Next Door lead vocalist, when the pair was at Harvard. In the years following, Pink Martini grew from four musicians to its current 12, and has gone on to perform its multilingual repertoire on concert stages and with symphony orchestras throughout Europe, Asia, Greece, Turkey, Lebanon, Canada, and the United States. The band's own label, Heinz Records, is named after Lauderdale's dog, and because everyone in the band contributes in the writing and arranging of songs, the repertoire is wildly diverse. At one moment, you feel like you're in the middle of a samba parade in Rio de Janeiro, and in the next moment, you are suddenly in a French music hall of the 1930s or in a palazzo in Napoli, like an urban musical travelogue. Lauderdale says, "We're very much an American band, but we spend a lot of time abroad, in Europe, in Turkey, in Lebanon, and therefore have the incredible opportunity to represent a different kind of America, an America which is the most heterogeneously populated country in the world, comprised of people from every country, every language, every religion. One of our goals is to make music which has broad appeal to people, no matter who they are or where they come from. We play the same set of music wherever we go, whether it's in a small farming community in Oregon, or in France or Turkey, or with a symphony orchestra. My hope is that we're creating music which can be turned up or down and played on almost any occasion, from background music of a love affair to vacuuming around the house." Both the poem and song are a fitting introduction to the Super Fairy Chronicles, from the time of waiting and trying to read the message, to those who were hanging on in the water through the long moonlit night. Stafford writes, "Everything that happens is the message. You read an event and be one and wait, like breasting a wave, all the while knowing by living, though not knowing how to live." The Super Fairy Wave started out small. When a young Silicon Valley entrepreneur put together a business plan in 2001, it seemed like it could be good for families, tourism, and trade. It was touted as a friendly, modern, green, inner island connector service, only 3 hours between islands. But as the financing got tricky, a New York investment banker stepped in to save the day with government contracts. Soon, the entrepreneur was out, and a board of former military commanders were in. John Lehman, whose firm does strictly military investing, became the lead financier and board chairman. He was a security advisor to Nixon under Kissinger and a member of the 9/11 Commission under Bush. He's an outspoken advocate for nuclear first strike and winnable nuclear wars. And with the project for a new American century, he's pushed hard for a vast expansion of the Navy fleet to dominate the world's oceans and, quote, protect our vital interests worldwide, end quote. He was predicted to be chief of staff in a McCain presidency. He invested $80 million in the Super Ferry, but only after the Maritime Administration gave a $140 million loan guarantee at taxpayers' expense, on one condition, that there would be no environmental review at any level. He also bought a big ship production yard in Alabama, adjacent to where the Super Ferry was manufactured, perfect for dozens more of these monster catamarans in case of a Navy contract. But any doubt about the geopolitical ambitions of the Super Ferry were put to rest when the new CEO became Admiral Thomas Fargo, commander of the U.S. Pacific Command, including the Navy, Air Force, and Marines, reporting directly to Rumsfeld and Bush. Linda Lingle, Republican governor and close friend of the Bush family, then got the Hawaii state legislature to authorize its own $40 million loan to the Super Ferry, putting taxpayer money at risk for a project they'd never consented to. She ordered state agencies to get out of the Super Ferry's way and stop their demands for an environmental impact study. Outraged citizens took the case to the Hawaii Supreme Court, which ruled unanimously for the EIS before the Super Ferry could rev up its 56,000-gallon engines. But in what she brazenly called Act Two, Lingle bullied the legislature into overriding the Supreme Court ruling. This new law allowed the ferry to operate while the EIS was being done and gave the EIS no power to stop the boat, no matter how disastrous their findings were. Throughout, she refused to consult with the small islands that the project was supposed to benefit. Instead, Lingle told protesters that they'd face $10,000 fines and jail time for violating terrorism laws if they went inside the zones set by Homeland Security. On August 26, 2007, the Super Ferry appeared on Kauai's horizon in its maiden voyage. 10% of Kauai's residents had signed a petition demanding an EIS. They had written letters, filed lawsuits, and testified in front of the legislature. When, in flagrant disregard of the law or public opinion, the Super Ferry entered the harbor, 1,500 people spontaneously showed up at the dock, beating drums, chanting, and waving tea leaves to ward off evil. Native Hawaiians, Japanese, Filipino, Portuguese, Chinese, descendants of missionaries, lawyers, musicians, doctors, professors, and mechanics. All distinctions of class and race were gone. Then, in a sort of Tiananmen Square challenge, a few dozen surfers leaped from the jetty to paddle out. The photo of this is phenomenal. They look like mice about to be run over by an impervious, demonic hummer of the sea. Dozens more jumped in like arrows from a bow. For 2 hours, a Coast Guard wielding M16s tried to herd the surfers while a SWAT team tried to disperse the crowd on shore. Finally, through aggressive intimidation, the ferry docked and a white-knuckled line of drivers inched out. To underscore the drama of the situation, I'll play an instrumental by Pink Martini called Song of the Black Swan. The second evening, the ship reappeared and the people in the water doubled. SWAT teams with German shepherds made some arrests, including 4 children, but they couldn't clear the people in the water. I'd like to refer to the morning after diary entry of Michael Schultz, a 61-year-old semi-retired banker who went into the water to block the Super Ferry, despite threats of being arrested. Someone loaned him a boogie board, and another person gave him a shirt to keep warm. He brought chunks of Snicker bars out to those who had already been in the water a couple of hours, who joked about it being a boogie board delivery. Under the rising full moon, he had quiet conversations with other protesters, with farmers about their lettuce and broccoli crops, and with teenagers about their concerns for the whales and dolphins. As the hours wore on, one woman led them in Hawaiian chants, which helped with the thirst and cold and occasional cramping. Every so often, the Super Ferry would kick on its engines and move towards them, while the Coast Guard and police boats incessantly harassed them. He writes, "On occasion, we would ask if they had anything to eat that they would share. They didn't. They shared that they were just doing their jobs. I'd heard those same words from some of the police back on the pier. For years, whenever I hear those words, I have always been reminded of the question I used to wrestle with as a youngster when I first learned about the Holocaust in Nazi Germany. How could a whole country of people allow something like the Holocaust to happen? I just couldn't understand it. Now I see how much easier it is to just do my job than to take a stand that might bring so much inconvenience into one's life and how easy it really is for a whole society to slide into numbness and denial while just doing my job. What is happening at Nawiliwili Harbor here on Kauai is about much, much more than the super ferry. It is a microcosm of how the military corporate establishment is circumventing existing laws, totally trampling the well-being and constitutional rights of people everywhere. He continues, "As I witnessed the conversations between the crews on the Coast Guard and the police boats and those in the water, it struck me now that those in the water were speaking truth as best they know it, and those in the boats spoke words containing intentional lies, other attempts at deception, or efforts to provoke fear. It struck me that if a person was going to be a peacekeeper, a fundamental requirement might be willingness to speak the truth." He then talks about the symbolism of a 12-year-old boy being met by police in riot gear after they've tricked him into getting arrested. After 3 long hours of quiet confrontation, the super ferry finally backed out of the harbor in retreat, amidst cheers, high fives, and surfboards slapping the water. As the swimmers returned to shore, more people jumped in to make it difficult for the police to identify them. Welcoming hands pulled out people and surfboards and gave them dry shirts and hats to disguise them from the SWAT team. Walking later across the park, a young Hawaiian man approached Michael and told him, "You're wearing my cap." Back at home, he laid out under the Kauaian night sky to witness the shooting stars and the unimaginable vastness of this universe within universes, wondering what the magic of this night's lunar eclipse holds for us all. He reflects, "The beauty and the courage of the Ohana together will stay in my heart. I wish I could do a search on this computer that would reveal the thoughts and feelings of each stalwart in the water as we watch the lights of the super ferry disappear over the horizon under the full moon. In those moments, life was good and all was well on Kauai. In seeming acknowledgement, a streaking meteorite flashed across the water of Kalapaki Bay." He concludes, "Today is another day, full of potentials and choices. Each is an opportunity to express our truth. May we have the wisdom to know what is right and the courage to do what is right, with peace in our hearts and love for one another. Blessings, Michael Schultz." "I'm someone who believes that every failure is a temporary setback, but success is never lost. It lives in history, empowers our collective voice, and brings us closer to the goal. Some would say that this uprising only bought a little time against the inevitable, but I think that peace and justice are inevitable. Kauai is a sign of good things to come. And so I have to play the ultimate song promising good things to come, which has been made into Hawaii's own, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, sung by Israel Kamakawiawoli. Somehow this song became authentic when sung by a mountain of a man who became the heart and soul of his occupied island.
Dreams that you dream of, dreams really do come. trouble melts like lemon drops. High above the chimney top, that's where you find me. Oh, somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly, and the dream that you did to, oh why can't I, oh, someday wish upon a star, wake up where the clouds are far behind, be where trouble melts like a lemon drops, high above the chimney top, that's where you find.
That was the late Israel Kamaka Wiawoli singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow. I particularly wish that I had my website up so I could have downloaded the YouTube I found to this song. It starts with a sign that says, "Kill 'em all and let God sort 'em out," under a grinning skull wearing a navy cap. It then goes on into a montage of beautiful Middle Eastern children. They might be Iraqi or Afghan or Palestinian or Pakistani, but they are smiling, eyes shining, playing, looking inquisitive, taking care of siblings, and laughing. This continues all the way through this ironic version of the song, up to the last photo, where an explosion has gone off and a small child is in her mother's arm crying. The day we wake up with the clouds far behind us can't come soon enough. I'd like to dedicate my final song to my daughters. The next decade is going to be a difficult one for the U.S., full of identity crises, learning to take responsibility, coming to terms with our entitlement, and having to master the art of the good apology. I don't think we're going to get through it gracefully. It's likely to get pretty ugly before it gets better. At the same time, my daughters will be going through their own decade of transition, from teens to 20s. I wish that the world they'll launch into was kinder and not so competitive. I wish relationships were based on respect and that there was a global community of parents who saw every person as someone's child. I wish there wasn't so much work to be done. And frankly, I wish that I could keep them at home forever. A wish the economy seems to be cooperating with. But since this isn't likely, I want them to know that I have faith in them. No matter who breaks their hearts, or what trouble finds them, or how lost they feel, I know they can come out on the other side of any difficult time. As a mother's love song to her three daughters, this is "We Walk the Same Line" from Everything But the Girl. This has been Teresa Caraggio with Third Paradigm. Special thanks also to Bob Dolezal from Turntables Unlimited in Sacramento. He kindly came to my AV rescue in trying to record Jerry Mander's talk, even giving me the correct cable. Although it didn't succeed this time, it wasn't for lack of trying, and we'll get it next time. And thanks also to Skidmark Bob for production and editing.
If you lose your faith, babe, you can have mine. And if you're lost, I'm right behind, 'cause we walk the same road.